I'd like to call the meeting of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. And the first order of business, we do have a quorum. First order of business is the minutes from April the 12th. Do I have a motion to accept the minutes? Representative Rosenthal. Any discussion or questions? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed? Opposed? Same sign. And we have approved the minutes. Today we have the markup of our Higher Education Policy and Finance Omnibus Bill. We have a number of amendments that we need to have our members offer. And with a little bit of luck, maybe we'll be done on time. So the amendments should be in your packet, and hopefully they're in the same order as all of us, the numerical. Oh, okay. There are apparently some updated copies coming around soon. With that, are we ready to start with the first one? Okay, again, we're going to go in the order that you have in your packet, unless somebody has a problem with that. Representative Eisenhower.
And this may be to your staff as well. Yes. Is the H323785 the amendment that was previously discussed before committee regarding MCA scores? Is that right?
A5?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just want to make sure I had the right one when we talked about it.
Representative Isaacson, that is correct, I believe.
Mr. Chair? Can I suggest we do the A10? Oh.
Okay. So you're offering the A5, but we have to do the A10? You're offering the A10 in place of A5?
Sorry.
Oh, please.
I apologize. I was confusing. I think the A10 gets the bill in the order we want it to look at.
Okay.
According to you guys, and then we would start with the other amendments.
Okay.
Just want to make sure. Didn't mean to be confusing with that.
That's fine. So, Representative Isaacson, you offer the A10 amendment. Would you like to explain it?
I am not the author of the A10 amendment.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so that's again my fault.
We're off on a real good start here.
Well,
who is the author?
This is what I do.
I'm
so I apologize.
I'm the author. Okay. See, I missed rehearsal.
I apologize.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
What are we doing? The A10?
Yeah. Sure. Representative Isaacson.
It is my understanding then that you offered the A10, and I have questions about that. That's okay?
That's okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is this the language from the Senate? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And does your staff or nonpartisan maybe just highlight any differences that might exist in that? That'd be great. From the previous language we had to the new language. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Isaacson, the two primary differences between the House language and the Senate language on the A-10 amendment are that if you look at page 5, you'll see in the A-10 that the benchmarks that would be established for college-ready MCA scores would be established by the Commissioner of Education, and then the Chancellor of Minsky would just review and confirm those benchmarks. The original House language is provided that the Minsky Chancellor would actually set those benchmarks himself. And then the second difference that I point out is on page 6. There's language that requires the Commission of Education to include a statement to parents and students, or students and families, like on 6.10, related to the effect of a college-ready MCA benchmark. And that's something that wasn't included in the House version of the bill.
Representative Isaacson.
Both of these effectively, thank you, Mr. Chair, both of these effectively represent the Senate's version of Bennett's bill we heard earlier this year. Would that be a fair summary of that?
Yep, you're correct.
Thank you.
Yep. Anyone in the audience care to comment on the 10 amendment?
Thank you.
welcome to the committee, and identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And I was going to speak more generally to the bill as a whole, but my comments really are directed to Article 2 and the A-10 amendment, and then also, if offered, the A-5 amendment. So maybe I'll just run through my comments really quickly. We think the language in the A-10 amendment, Article 2 specifically, will help reduce student referrals to post-secondary remedial courses and the related time and cost that that brings to students. As you know, the 2016 Getting Prepared report found that nearly 8,500 high school graduates from the class of 2013 were required to spend almost $12 million on remedial courses. With the A-10 amendment, through the combined efforts of MinSCU and the Minnesota Department of Education, students, families, and educators will have more direct information about post-secondary expectations and how well prepared students are relative to those expectations. By using the MCA exams, families and educators will have more time, potentially as early as the third grade, to identify and strengthen student academic needs and plan for accelerated courses. For example, rather than having just a year or two at the end of high school to close identified gaps in reading and math, we can give families and teachers earlier notice, more time, and to help with smaller gaps. And for students who meet the MCA or ACT benchmarks in high school, we can reduce the number of tests they're required to take. And it's on this last point that should the A-5 amendment be offered, we'd ask that you not adopt it for at least two reasons. First, the benchmarks on the MCAs indicating students are college and career ready will be reviewed and approved by MinSCU. Second, the MCA provision is the same as the exemption you passed last year for students who meet ACT benchmarks. Why would we treat students differently if they meet these respective benchmarks? In short, under the A-10 amendment, students who meet career and college-ready benchmarks on the MCAs are not prohibited from taking remedial courses. They just aren't required to do so. By asking MinSCU to partner with the Department of Ed to identify post-secondary expectations, we can give students, families, and educators better information, more time, and in the end, reduce the need for remedial courses. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. I'd like to correct something the previous testifier said. Review and confirm is much different than set. And I'm not sure that I'm clear that the language in the A-10 amendment actually gives the authority to MinSCU to be making those decisions based on what their criteria are. And again, I would remind everybody who's listening anywhere that to put the onus on MinSCU as being the reason why we have a problem with remedial education is an incorrect approach, because the onus is on K-12. MinSCU sets standards so you become part of a college. You have to meet those standards. And if you don't, that isn't like MinSCU is the bad guy here. And again, I feel like these bills are pushing that agenda, and I don't appreciate it.
Mr. Bartholomew.
Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Isaacson, I don't in any way want to give the impression we're assigning blame for remedial course taking on one system or the other. In fact, our support for this whole idea is that it brings the two systems together to share information about where kids need to be. And so they have more time while they're in the K-12 system, where support is for free, that they can identify those gaps and work on them more quickly, so when they graduate from high school, they're less likely to need remedial services.
Representative Isaacson.
There are two parts of the A-10 amendment that are going through from Bennett's language. The second part, which talks about a state and college must not require an individual to take remedial courses in an area where the person has received a college or an MCA benchmark, that's problematic to me. But the part that talks about making sure that we give them the information they need to be successful ahead of time, that's a good part of the bill. I think that's a very worthy part. The concern I have comes back to this idea, though, that we're setting the scores through the education system of high school that colleges are then going to be asked to review and agree to, right? We don't allow, that doesn't make sense to have one entire entity setting the standard for another entire entity how they should do things. On top of that, all you say is review and confirm. What happens if they don't confirm? Where's the language that explains that? Do they have the authority to just go away and go rogue if they want to and not follow the recommendations? That isn't clear here. Therefore, this is not a thought-out amendment just yet. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that, and I hope that we can have a little discussion about that.
Mr. Bartholomew?
Mr. Chair, members and Representative Isaacson, two thoughts in regard to that. One, if there's stronger language, certainly we're open to that. The intent is to have MNSCU be able to review and confirm whether or not that score is appropriate in reading and math for the MCAs. And the effective date for that exemption is in the 2018-19 school year. So there's time built in there for the two systems, MNSCU and MDE, to work on things if need be. So it's not effective immediately. There's time for people to work if need be.
We have another testifier. Would you like to? Oh, before we get to you, we want to go to Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just going to make a comment. I made these when we heard this bill earlier, and I do have concerns about this being included. I don't think it's ready, and while I do appreciate that there's a big time lag here, I think we're still not getting, and I don't know if I don't make my point clear when I make it or you just don't agree with it, but MCAs are criterion reference tests. They're meant to test whether the teachers, whether the students have learned and the teachers have taught the basic standards. It's not college prep. And the other issue with this is norm reference tests would be, you know, that's a different beast, and that's not what this is. These are criterion reference. So they're very specific to the state of Minnesota and the standards that we teach in our schools. And also, they're tested far before the student senior year. And unless you're going to put in a regime of testing again at the senior year, you can't hold the school district to tests that were given in 10th or 11th grade when they're in 12th grade. So, I understand what you want to do, and I agree that something needs to be done to make sure that when kids graduate, you know, they have the skills ready to go to college and they don't have to take remedial courses. I totally support that concept. This bill does not do it, and it's really misusing the MCAs. And so, you know, I guess it's good that there's many years because maybe there'll be a time to, you know, create a different test or an additional test, which I know we're trying to peel back tests, but this system is not set up right to do what you want it to do, in my opinion.
Mr. Bartholomew, do you have another comment?
Mr. Chair, not to get into too much of a time, but actually the MCAs are the perfect measure for career and college readiness in Minnesota. They are built on our state standards, in which MNSCU plays a large role in helping to develop. The ACTs are largely a norm reference test. And both post-secondary systems have indicated that if students master the standards, they will be ready for entry into their systems. And that's calibrated through the MCAs, again, in which post-secondary faculty have played a significant role. And if you look at the remediation reports put out by SLEDS in the Office of Higher Education, students who meet and pass the high school MCAs and meet our standards are far more likely to have success in post-secondary education than kids on the meet the ACT benchmarks, which presumes 25% will not get a C or better.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, these tests are not given at the point of graduation. You just need to understand that. They're not given at the point of graduation. And to measure a student who's taking a test in 10th or 11th grade, when are you going to decide between that point and graduation that they've made up unless you're going to retest? And so you can't hold you can't hold them to a level when there's still 2 years of learning to occur. because I don't expect a 10th grader to be college ready. I think they need those extra years of education to be ready. But if you've tested them in 10th or 11th grade, they haven't been given the full amount of time to do the learning. So something else needs to happen.
Representative Uwakeman, do you have a question for the testifier?
Yes, just, well, maybe a clarification. I don't know if he's the one that could answer it or not, Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
Then we have another testifier, too, who need to get to. So go ahead.
Okay, just a quick question. Well, one point, thank you, Mr. Chair. One point is, one, kids do not have to pass the MCAs to pass high school. And two, when it comes to the math standards, a lot of us know what happens over time with math. I bet you a lot of us have trouble. I know. Thank God I married a math teacher to help my kids with math class right now because it's been a while. But a student could take math during 10th, take the MCAs during 10th or 11th grade, get a decent score in the math section, not take math at all 12th grade, and then struggle when they get to college because they've forgotten. So that gap is a big deal. So I just wanted to kind of reiterate what Representative Isaacson and Representative Norton were saying. Thank you.
And Mr. Bartholomew.
Mr. Chair, Representative Yokel. And I knew I was going to mess it up. My apologies. The ACTs are given at the 11th grade as well. The MCA math is given at 11th grade. The 10th grade reading is given at the 10th grade. But the thing to remember is, this is an informational system only. There are no requirements in this. The benefit is, if a kid is performing at a certain level on the MCAs, they're going to know where they are relative to post-secondary expectations, and they'll have a better sense. If I'm not at that level, I may be expecting to take some remedial courses or developmental courses. If I'm above, it's an option for me to still do so. But there's no mandate in any of this. This is strictly for student and family informational purposes.
We should have acknowledged we have some students that are now leaving from Duluth, University of Minnesota Duluth, and I should have done that earlier. But Representative, you're welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Once again, the ACTs and the MCAs are completely different tests and are testing different things. And I am not opposed to MCAs in 11th grade to have a benchmark score so kids know what they may need to do in 12th grade to get themselves ready. What I'm opposed to is that you're telling the colleges now to say, because the K-12 system didn't quite get them ready, then you're not able to get them ready for that test either. So it's I don't want to lay it at the foot of the colleges unless they have some control over who they think needs to have some remedial education. So that's all I want to say. Thank you.
All right. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, Chair Norness, members. My name is Paku Yang, and I'm System Director of P20 and College Readiness at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I apologize. I have a cold, and so I sound very stuffy, but this is Minnesota. Earlier, I had already provided a testimony for House File 3237, and I had stated our concerns and comments with this bill, and we have been working with Representative Bennett on this bill. So I will not repeat my earlier comments. But I do want to share with you that a number of our campuses have shared concerns with this bill, specifically with the A-10 amendment as written, as articulated by the comments that have already been shared. So I will not repeat those. However, what I do want to say is, if the MCA scores are to be used, we are supportive of a bill that will allow for the use of MCA college readiness scores as one of multiple indicators for course placement, not the sole indicator for course placement. And so we are supportive of Representative Isaacson's A5 amendment. This amendment is more reflective of my earlier testimony, the concerns that have been raised by our campuses, and Minsky's current position. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from members? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I believe we're ready to vote on the A-10 amendment. All those in favor, say aye. We're voting on the amendment, A-10, okay? All those in favor?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, who's the author of this amendment? I didn't hear.
Would you like him to stand up?
Yes. You're a chair. You're the chair.
Right.
Very good chair. Thank you.
I know you're doing this to make me nervous, but okay. Now, all those in favor of the A-10 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment is passed. Or adopted. Passed. Done. Representative Isaacson, do you have, let's see, where are we at now? Oh, okay. Yes. Do you have an A-17 amendment?
Yes, sir.
Do I?
And
just so we're clear, the A-17 is the same as A-5. It just reflects it into the Senate language we just adopted versus the original language.
Okay. Mr. Gehring has a couple of typos that he found on the amendment.
It's on me. Mr. Chair,
Mr.
Chair, Representative Isaacson, on the A-17 amendment, there's just two technical corrections that are necessary to more accurately reflect the Senate language. On 1.7, delete the word score and insert benchmark. And then 1.8, delete paragraph E and insert paragraph M.
I love you guys. Everyone get that?
No.
It
was my fault.
Made me giggle.
It's me. It's my fault.
Mr. Chair and committee members, so the amendment would be line 1.7, delete score and insert benchmark. And then line 1.8, delete paragraph E and insert paragraph M. So then that whole phrase would read, whether the individual received a college-ready Minnesota comprehensive assessment benchmark in that subject area consistent with section 120B.30, subdivision 1, paragraph M.
Representative Isaacson, you want to make that move?
I move that. Wonderful technical change.
All right. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And so that is done. Okay, now you want to explain the A-17 amendment?
You bet. So, going back to when Representative Bennett brought this bill in, I really do believe her intentions were pretty good, and we do see an issue that has arisen. The problem is that we're taking a snapshot while this issue is in the process of being solved, right? So, a couple of years ago, we talked about the ACCUPLACER as not maybe fitting our needs to place students when it comes to understanding remedial work. Meanwhile, we saw an abundance of people who were having to do remedial work. And so I know that MNSCU has been in the process of trying to fix that in the last year, trying to fix that, and that there was an understanding that we would be able to, that they would be coming forth with a better way to manage that. In the meantime, Representative Bennett saw that there was a problem and, as any elected official would do, thought to try to solve it, which I respect that, and I think that's a good thing. However, I think that she's stepping into something midstream that we've already asked them to do, and they are already doing. And now we're saying the next day, oh, by the way, we wanted you to do it this way specifically. And that's our purview, perhaps, to do that, depending on how you look at it. My concern is a little different, that when I know that they're already on the process of trying to adjust for this problem with remedial education, it seems disingenuous if the legislature the next year comes and says, no, we don't think you're doing it the right way, we're going to have you do it this way now, when we haven't even had a chance to give them that moment to do it the way they're supposed to. We got to trust these agencies, that we, especially higher education and other groups, that when they say they're in the process of trying to fix something, that they're going to do it. And so I have a problem with the amendment on that kind of philosophical basis. That being said, there's some wisdom to some of the things she talked about. And I'm not opposed to all parts of her amendment. In fact, the only part that I'm concerned with, I address here in my A-5, now A-17 amendment. And what I want to be understood here is I'm not taking away the responsibility of MNSCU and the Board of Education and the collaboration that goes on. I don't want to see that stopped. But I think that we need to understand that this isn't a problem that's simply solved by one test. And I think Representative Norton has clearly made this argument for me, so I'm not going to digress into that. But what this does is it says, when deciding if an individual must take remedial non-credit course, a state college or university must consider, along other relevant factors as determined by the college or university, whether the individual received a college-ready comprehensive benchmark in that area. That's a reasonable thing to do, that we would expect the university to decide, and only the university, to decide what it means to be ready to be at that university, as every other university on the planet does it. That's their turf. That's their job. That's what they do. And so What I like about the amendment and why I think there's a compromise that I think is good for both sides is it provides us with that opportunity to say, you know what, we think this is something you should look at. We want to make sure that you incorporate this in all the other things that you're doing and let us know, does this work as well as others? Does it work better? Does it work worse? I think it has a real positive kind of middle ground there, and I hope that you guys will agree with me on that. Thank you.
Questions? Any other testimony that anyone would care to add? You've covered it quite well. Hearing no other discussion or questions, all those in favor of the A17 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's adopted. Okay. I think we have the A8 amendment next. Mr. Representative Bernardi, is that your?
Thank you, Ms. Go ahead. So would you like, I would like to move the A8 amendment.
And would you like to tell us about it?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the bill that Representative Pugh testified earlier to get it included in the bill. And I'm also an author as well. And I'm bringing this as an amendment to have the ombudsperson for to monitor the treatment of individuals participating in the University of Minnesota Department of Psychiatry clinical trials to include that in their scope of work. And we talked at length about that when Representative Pugh testified before her bill. So if anybody has any questions, they can feel free to ask. And the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota shall reimburse the Office of the Ombudsperson for the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities for the oversight of these costs. So, I don't know.
Oh. All right. Any questions? Any testifying from the audience? Okay, Representative Grunhagen, maybe you can begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. How is this being paid for out of existing funds?
Representative Bernardi?
Mr. Chair. Yes, it would be if they're not meeting the needs of the human sub. Well, they're not meeting the needs of the human subjects of advocating for them. This is putting something in place that an ombudsperson can be a voice and an advocate for them.
And the cost would be, Representative Bernardi, the cost would be picked up by the university.
Yes,
Bernardi.
Yep.
Okay. All right. We have a testifier. Do you want to fund it? Identify yourself and begin.
So, Chair Nornes, thank you. I'm Dr. Herman from the University of Minnesota, Vice President of Research, and like to just address briefly this bill that's been co-sponsored by Representative Bernardi and Pugh. I want to say that, you know, we are very interested in making sure that all of the work that we do in interfacing with our human research participants and volunteers is done at the most highly ethical levels, and we have put in place and are putting in place many different mechanisms to achieve that goal, a lot of which we've discussed here. We certainly welcome partnership, and we certainly welcome interaction with the ombudsman for mental health. And as we have indicated previously, have already interfaced with her around these issues on a number of occasions. Having said that, I do think that we are still concerned about the fiscal nature of this. We don't have personally an estimate about the cost that this would be to the university, and this particular mechanism's paying for this activity would set a precedent for the university and for the legislature that has not been established, at least as far as I know, previously.
Questions? Representative Bernardi?
No, Mr. Chair. Okay. But I would ask if the fiscal staff would like to make a comment on the numbers that have been pulled together regarding the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair and members, at this time the fiscal note is not yet complete. We have preliminary data on the bill that Representative Pugh introduced. At this time, it shows a cost of $259,000 in fiscal year 17, and then a cost each individual year in the tails of $197,000. I would stress that these are preliminary data, and the note has not yet been certified by MMB, but that is the information we have at this time.
Any further comments, Dr. Herman?
So, Chair Norris, I would just state that while I've not been made aware of those preliminary estimates, I think it's difficult for the university to project the actual cost because this would depend on the number of research trials that are being undertaken. And if those were to increase, the cost of the universities could increase significantly. And as you said, there are also tails that are associated with each one of these trials. So I think that the concern is that it's not clear to us that we have a good understanding of the fiscal impact of this on the university, and the mechanism that's being proposed in the legislation or the amendment to require reimbursement to the Ombudsman for this activity could place the university in a situation that would challenge its ability to be able to fully fund this activity.
Any other comments? Representative Bernardi.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that these are extraordinary times, and the protection of people that are your Herman research participants is important, especially as you're implementing your changes. And it appears that there's quite a few baby steps that have been happening over the last 10 years. And I could see, like, if you, were eventually in the future that this could be changed and you could fully do it yourself, but until there's that confidence for the public and for participants, I think it's important that we do all the protections we can for the vulnerable people in the state of Minnesota that have could be affected by this.
Any further comments? Anyone else want to speak for or against?
My name is Mark Hughes, and I feel I owe this to the University of Minnesota. Let me tell you what I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but let me tell you what I think I understand happening. We don't have the preliminary numbers that the University of Minnesota needs here to forecast what they need to do. Ultimately, what we're doing by saying who's going to pay for what is we're hurting the education of our secondary post-education at the University of Minnesota. And as a University of Minnesota, we need to put out a quality education. So everybody has to come to fruition here, amends, get the numbers together so we know what we're going to do and who's going to pay for what. I don't think it's fair for the University of Minnesota to take on a fiscal responsibility when we don't know what the numbers, shared numbers are here. Thank you.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes, for your testimony. One thing I do want to comment on this, the University of Minnesota is already supposed to be providing the service, but there's not a level of confidence. They could redirect those resources and utilize the Office of the Ombudsperson to do those services. And the University of Minnesota has known about this bill for a period of time now. They could have been conducting their own analysis of how much they felt it was going to cost.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Bernardi for having put forth this amendment, and Dr. Herman for speaking to this again. We were all here not too long ago for a lengthy period of time, and we heard from the ombudsman. We heard from one of the doctors involved in the research or the department, from the Elizabeth, sorry, I can't think of her last name, but who actually drafted the legislative audit report. And, you know, after all of that conversation and having met with the ombudsman since, I'm still just very concerned. I believe we would be missing an opportunity for some really legislative involvement here. We don't have a fiscal note yet. I've been asking. This was a surprise to me, too. So it must have just been forthcoming. I don't know what the scope of the project will look like, especially given that I don't believe that the ombudsman even knows yet the number of trials that you are going to be conducting, the number of subjects, you know, all of that. But I do agree with Representative Bernardi, and you know, I brought this bill because I really, really do believe in the work that the Office of the Legislative Auditor produces, and would very much like to see this happen. I do believe that it's maybe unprecedented. I don't know if an agency or the university has ever been challenged to absorb the cost of something like this. But I think that the benefits of doing this would be great. I would like to see us committee members approve of this amendment and look forward to just continuing the conversation between now and, you know, as this bill moves forward. So appreciate that.
Dr. Herman.
So Representative Pugh and Representative Bernardi, I want to try to just reiterate again that we are absolutely committed to working with everyone, including the ombudsman, around the protection of individuals who volunteer to participate in clinical research who have impaired decision-making activities. So I think that there's no doubt and no question in our minds that the intent to have appropriate oversight of these activities, including by ourselves and others, is the right thing to do. I do also think that, as you all know, the legislative auditor is in the process of doing another review on the progress that's being made at the university surrounding the issues identified in his first report. We had a visit by our external consultant at the end of March. And that individual also met with the legislative auditor. So there's a lot of data gathering and a lot of information that I think will be made available within the next month about how well the university is doing and where the university stands with respect to its progress on this issue. And then the last thing I would say is that I personally think that it is a difficult situation when you always take on an activity without knowing the full cost of that activity. And I would say if I bought a house that I couldn't afford, then I would put myself in a financial position that would be very difficult and have probably unintended long-term consequences. So it seems to me that having some more concrete information about the costs, not only the short-term and the long-term, before a decision is made about how to move forward on this would be an appropriate thing to do.
Thank you, Mr. Herman. Any other? Representative Isaacson.
Is it, am I understanding correctly from where we were before to now that we're asking the University of Minnesota to absorb the cost of the ombudsman, extra cost to conduct the research or the oversight? Is that correct?
That's how I understand it.
Okay. You know, I don't necessarily have a problem with the oversight if it's needed. I think there are some consistencies there that need to be managed. I'm just really uncomfortable with asking them to appropriate money they've already appropriated and put it somewhere else.
I would only add that it's hard to also appropriate money for something we don't know what it's going to cost. So
there is that too, yes.
It would be almost, as I see it, this is a good amendment to get something going. The university can always come back once they know what the cost is going to be and we'd be open, I'm sure, to making sure that that is funded mm-hmm. properly, mm-hmm. which would be next year, more than likely.
Yeah.
So that's how I see it, that it's a starting point.
I agree with you, sir.
So, Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that this is a measure that ought to be implemented this year. They do have resources that they say that they're doing now. There's not the confidence level that people are being protected. They have lots of positions at the University of Minnesota. They're already saying that they're paying for this. My point is we don't have the confidence level that it's actually working. They could redirect those funds to pay for these costs. And if it does cost more to do it right, then they ought to be spending that amount of money now. So that's what I'm advocating for, protecting of people now as the University of Minnesota is implementing its strategies. And once we have the confidence level that it's working, then we can reconsider it at that time.
I hope I didn't indicate that I'd have them wait a year. This could be implemented as fast as they can, but we would know within the next year, by the end of the year, what it's costing them. If they need some help paying for it, then that'd be a case they'd have to make at some point. So, Representative Bernardi.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that the university ought to have a handle of what they're spending right now on this important work, and we haven't heard any data from them about the fiscal implications, except for wondering what it does cost. What is it costing now?
Any further comment, Dr. Herman?
Chair Nornis, Representative Bernardi, I think that the university has significant investments in the area of clinical research in aggregate, including those that are devoted to oversight. Based upon the implementation plan that the university came out with last year, the university calculated what the investment would be to increase the activities based upon the recommendations of the implementation plan. So the university has budgeted for those activities. With this particular amendment, there will be additional costs that the university has not planned for because at the time we hadn't planned that the ombudsman would have certain roles and certain activities, and it's clearly from the ombudsman's testimony that their office doesn't have any extra resources to devote to that. So I would say that we can give you an estimate of the investments that we're making in different areas, compliance, oversight, etc. But this is yet an added cost on top of that the university has not planned for and has not budgeted in any of the activities that it is developing as it's moving forward and enhancing the protection of our research participants.
Any other comments? All right. We are then prepared to vote on the A8 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
All right. The A8 amendment has been adopted.
Thank you.
Representative Bernardi, A9.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you. This is a bill that's been before our committee already, and it's regarding getting access to information for parents and students to know the coursework that they're taking in high school, whether it's concurrent enrollment courses, post-secondary enrollment options, advanced placement courses, international baccalaureate courses, what our Minnesota public and private colleges and universities will cutoff and what courses that they will accept when they enter that institution. It builds transparency and it also builds accountability. You know, the system is so decentralized now and it's very difficult. I've met with my school district and they want this issue addressed. A lot of students don't have the political savvy or their parents to really navigate this complex system, and it's different at all the universities. And you add on top of that, that the administration, who a lot of these people have PhDs, they have master's degrees, they can't navigate it either, and they're needing help and support in helping their students be able to get the credit that they deserve and to know what to expect. We're trying to address college debt of students and trying to reduce that burden on students and their families. This is one tool in the toolbox in which can help students and their families be able to know what they can expect in the coursework that their students are taking and are expecting to get college credit, knowing in advance and having the transparency and accountability there. And in the long run, this is going to reduce student debt because they won't have to be double paying for courses that they thought they were going to get for credit when they were college credit when they were attending high school.
All right, thank you. Any questions? Representative Uwakem?
Just a quick question for Representative Bernardi. Thank you, Chair. Just to understand, how often would the website need to be updated? Because I know coursework changes all the time. I kind of played around at home with the different colleges our kids had looked at, and usually it's only a few clicks in on a website where you can find this information. So if the OHE is collecting all this, do you view it as an active database or something where people can click on a link on a spreadsheet to bring them to the university's website to see it? Because that the information on the university's website can change a lot, too, from year to year. So how often would you expect it to be updated?
Representative Bernardi?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would leave that up to the Office of Higher Education to decide how to share the information and gather the information so that parents mm-hmm. can know about the dual acceptance policies of each of the Minnesota public and private colleges and universities.
Anyone in the audience wish to comment for or against? Seeing none. All those in favor then of the A9 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A9 amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Next, the A11. Representative Uwakem.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A11 amendment. I want to thank you first for incorporating into Article 1, Section... I got to find the right field. I have in front of me. It's too much paper here. Article 1, Section 1, Subdivision 4. You kind of correct the problem that OHE has had with administering new programs from now going forward, where they can retain some of that money right away on the startup to get admin going and IT going so they can assist students. There was a program that we put in place last year, and unfortunately I wasn't here, so I'm not as versed in it, but I have heard quite a lot from our school districts how beneficial this is going to be to some of our students, the MNSCU two-year occupational grant pilot program. And some of their students are having a little trouble getting the information they need from OHE because OHE's also wasn't able to access the money for the admin cost. That's not until the July 1st of this year. So I took a cue from you, Representative Nornes, and the bill that we had before us in House File 3789, which allowed MNSCU to access that information, access that money to administer the program right now, as students are juniors right now ending up the school looking at where they're going to apply for the fall and really need that information now. And a few weeks can make a big difference in a kid making this decision. So all this does is take Representative Nornes. House File 3789 is an amendment, allows MNSCU to access that money they would be able to access on July 1st, just a little bit earlier, so that they can help administer the program and get the kids the information they need to make good decisions. So that's it in a nutshell.
Okay. Questions? Any comments from anyone in the audience, for or against? I think you got a winner. Hearing no other questions, comments, the A11 amendment is then up. And all those in favor of the A11 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And that is A11 is adopted. Staying in order here, we have the A12 amendment. Representative Norton.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We had a very, very quick hearing on this bill recently, and I know you didn't have a budget target to work with, Mr. Chair, so I am directing the 257,200 of startup costs for this program from the operations and maintenance budget. And oh, they're back in. I was hoping they'd stay out of the room. The University of Minnesota will not be thrilled, but hopefully, if I just acknowledge that this isn't probably to their liking, but I do feel very strongly about this program. And members, I wish we'd had a little bit more time when we had the bill heard. If you remember, it was the very last one at the end of the day, and I know some of you may have had further questions, and one of the ones that's come to me since that time, I'll just answer now for you is, you know, why not all schools, or why just select a school? And I know that the University of Minnesota Rochester Vice Chancellor would have been very happy to answer that. What I can tell you is I've received calls from several, actually, Minsky universities and college saying, A, I wish I had this program, or B, could you add us? And after we talked about it, they said, you know, go ahead with our blessing, and we hope it's successful, and we would like to consider doing something in the future. And I will say, we do have, St. Cloud State has a very small program, and as I mentioned in the testimony, Augsburg is the one that Hazelden recommends. But it would be nice to have one of our university campuses be able to offer this, too. So I would say, Mr. Chair, that this will have at least one program in each of those three sectors, public, private, you know, Minsky, and the U. And so I'm asking for your support to keep this in play yet this year. And perhaps if there's a little bit of money, we could take, you know, give back the university's O&M budget if they so choose. But if not, I think this is a very worthy cause, and I ask your support.
Very good program. Any comments, questions from members? We'll take testimony from the audience here. Go ahead and
thank you, Mr.
state your name, please.
I'm Erin Dady, Special Assistant to President Kaler at the University of Minnesota for Government and Community Relations. Mr. Chair, I want to thank Representative Norton for her work on this bill and her passion for our students at the University of Minnesota Rochester who are in recovery, and we share her commitment to that work. However, we are concerned about the way that it's funded through an O&M. Of course, we would prefer an increase in O&M funding to get this program up and running. It's not on our list of Board of Regents priorities at this time, but we look forward to continuing to work with Representative Norton to pilot the program and serve our students in recovery in some way, and we appreciate her work on this issue.
All right, thank you very much. Anyone else care to speak?
No.
Oh, okay. Then we will vote on the A12 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed? The A12 amendment has been adopted.
Thank you, Member.
We're going to move to the A15 amendment. I know President Kaler is here to testify, and he has to leave fairly soon. So we'd like to move on to the A15 amendment. Representative Whalen, your amendment.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is a what I believe is a very reasonable compromise to a bill I had presented in committee previously. It requires that the university establish a fetal tissue research center to oversee all of their research activities that use fetal tissue. And in some conversations I've had since the amendment has been posted, I do have one brief oral amendment, Mr. Chair.
Would you care to state the amendment or the,
yes.
The change?
Strike line 1.14.
Everyone get that? Okay. You care to explain
yes.
or continue?
So, Mr. Chair, the concern was, and in part, actually, I know There were other concerns about whether or not the university would be able to continue using the research or using the tissue that they currently have obtained from aborted sources. And my intent was never to stop them from using tissue they currently had. But there's also some question about obtaining tissue from aborted sources in the future, which, for the record, my goal and my intent was always that that would be that would cease. That's always been my goal. And if this, I feel like, is a step in the right direction, where we're establishing a center for them to procure tissue from babies that die of natural causes to do research, using funding that they currently have, it's a step in the right direction. And the conversation, I am hoping, will continue. We have just briefly spoken. I spoke with President Kaler, and I am believing and hoping that we can continue the conversation, and this amendment is in part a way to do that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A15 and ask for your support. Okay.
President. Okay, Mr. Gehring has a technical comment or two.
Mr. Chair, Representative Whalen, just to make sure that your amendment that you're incorporating here works grammatically correctly. So you'd be deleting line 1.14 and 1.13. You strike the semicolon and insert a period. And 1.11 after the semicolon, insert an and.
Thank you. I agree. We want to be grammatically correct, Mr. Chair.
I think we have to act also on your oral amendment. We haven't done that.
Okay. Yet. Thank you. I ask for your support on the oral amendment.
Representative Isaacson, on the amendment or on?
On the amendment, actually. I just want to clarify something. There's some confusion, and I want to make sure that we're all on the same page before we vote. It is my understanding that by removing that section, and if anybody can clarify this, I'd appreciate it, does not prohibit, A, the use of aborted fetal tissue by the U that they currently have, and does not prohibit future purchases if they decide to do that. Is that correct?
Representative Whalen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is correct.
And that what I think some of the confusion is that when you look at line 1.15, it says the center may only, which means that we're referring only to the center they may create. We're not referring to the rest of the university. Is that correct?
Representative Whalen?
That would be correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure, because there was some confusion over here, and I think it helps to talk all about right. Verbally. Thank you.
Then we have the amendment to the amendment here that we need to adopt. If there's any other questions, we can take them. Otherwise, Representative Bernardi?
Right. Sorry for, I don't know if I should be asking this after this is accepted or not, but I just want to have a clear understanding on this. The center, and that's the new center, I wanted to find out if that is going to affect the recruitment of researchers and that sort of thing. And so do you want me to ask that now, or do you want me to ask it after this amendment?
I would like to act on the amendment to the amendment, and then we can get you an answer.
Because I'm thinking that it's important, since it's if it was an amendment that was already written up and we had it, but since it's being an oral amendment, there might be other things that need to be adjusted as well. So I think it'd be good to have that conversation right now.
That's fair, if that's what you would care to do. At this point, welcome, President Rhodes.
I can't wait to.
Okay, President Kaler. No,
thank you.
Time is precious here.
Thank you, Chair Norris. I appreciate that. Members of the committee, I'm Eric Kaler. I'm the president of the University of Minnesota. And I'm here today to share with you that we do have concerns about this amendment and ultimately will oppose it. We have worked closely with legislators to understand their concerns about using human fetal tissue from elective terminations in our research, and we've taken those concerns seriously, putting in place new tracking, procurement oversight, and disposition policies and procedures, and we remain committed to doing our research ethically and responsibly, and to treating all human tissue with respect and dignity. We are willing to further study the feasibility of using tissue from miscarriages, as this amendment requires, but also from other medically necessary terminations. And thus, while we profoundly respect the deeply held views of those who offer this legislation, we recognize that it no longer rescinds already allocated funding for the medical discovery teams, but it does redirect some of it away from support of those critical teams, and we oppose that aspect of the amendment. But we do recognize the the oral amendment and the important oral amendment and the removal of line 114 and the clarifying questions that Representative Isaacson has asked puts us in a place where we are willing to continue to have the discussion, but on the basis of the allocation of funding, we do go on record as opposing this amendment.
All right. Thank you, President Kaler.
Mr. Chair, okay, my question specifically, is this going to impact the University of Minnesota's ability to attract researchers?
President Kaler.
Chair Nornes, members of the committee, any restriction on our ability to take to go wherever the science takes us is not a positive. But I do recognize the strong feelings that members of this body and some citizens of Minnesota have about this research. So I'm willing to continue the conversation and work to mitigate any impact that this would have on our ability to recruit world-class researchers.
Thank you, President Kaler. Representative Norton.
Mr. Chair, I appreciated Representative Isaacs. Sorry, I'm having trouble talking.
Well, Representative Isaacs. By to run out of some air there.
Well, it's not air. It's I'm sorry.
Okay.
Questioning there, because I guess if it isn't doing what he suggested it was doing, then I guess I'm curious as to why we would spend the money and the effort to create a center for part of the fetal research, but not all of it, because it can happen outside of the. So I guess, you know, I don't. To me, if you're going to do this, then in your oral amendment should have gone further and remove line 1.15 and 1.16. Yeah. As well, but there's no need for the center to create a center for something that will only supervise or oversee part of the research. And why would you oversee the part that you don't have a concern with, I guess? And so I'm just going to raise. I don't think we should do the amendment. The one you had in here was fine on Article 4 prior, but the. I think it's fine to move ahead with some thought that if you can use tissue, as you worded, due to the natural death of a fetus, it's fine. But we also know from the testimony that was made earlier that there are that might be problematic. In fact, I think they said they were concerned that you could use tissue that had infection or chromosomal abnormality or something that could change the outcomes and so I just unless this was really clear that there was a section in there that said other research can go on as it has been, I'm just really uncomfortable putting this in here and spending, you know, asking the university to spend extra money to do something this narrow, I guess. So I don't know if, you know.
Representative Whalen.
Yeah, Representative Whalen would like to.
Yeah, actually, thank you, Representative Norton. You make a great point. And in fact, you know, this was posted and I, you know, just talked to President Kaler and we thought that this might be a way forward that would give us, again, a way to continue the conversation. And that's what I really wanted. And so you make a great point that we do want to oversee the part of the research that is on aborted tissue as well as on tissue for babies that die naturally. And so, you know, now I'm sitting here thinking about that, if that would be too complicated to make an oral amendment, and I guess I would ask the president, if we don't do the oral amendment, but with the understanding that we can keep having the conversation because of the concerns Representative Norton, I think, very rightly brought to our attention. I would ask President Kaler about that.
Suggestion is to withdraw your oral amendment. President Kaler, have any comment?
Chair Nornes, Representative Whalen, I would strongly oppose that. As I read this, it says the purpose of the center must be to provide oversight of all research activities at the university that request the use of fetal tissue, not just those associated with the center, parenthetically, and ensure compliance with applicable laws and policies, et cetera, for all work at the university. I am profoundly troubled by 114. That would act as the central source of procurement for fetal tissue. That would suggest that, in fact, we could no longer procure fetal tissue from elective determinations. That would limit our ability to follow the science where it leads us. It would impact our ability to hire the best bioscientist. So to me, the striking of line 114 in the oral amendment makes enables me to continue the conversation, but I would be dramatically opposed to the amendment without the removal of 114.
I think that's a good case then for continuing the discussion on the amendment to the amendment, and we need to do that as quickly as we can. I mean, not that we're in a rush, but we have anyway. Go ahead, Representative Norton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, I appreciate that you're willing to continue to have this discussion, and I'm concerned, I guess, with the research center that's procuring anything. I think that should be left to the university, and so if that whole Section 3 was taken out, and if you wanted to just oversee all research at the U, I think that would be, you would have to work with the university to say, do they believe this is something that would be helpful? And if so, it should be paid for. But I'm just very concerned with this. I liked what was in there before in Article 4. I think this is kind of throws a wrench into it and kind of goes back to the long debate we had last week, and I'm uncomfortable with it.
Okay. Any more discussion on the amendment to the amendment? Otherwise, all those in favor of the amendment to the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, the amendment to the amendment has passed and adopted. Now we need to talk about the A15 amendment as it stands. Any further discussion on that? Oh, Representative Gruenhagen, I'm sorry, you were on the list. I forgot.
Oh, but I've been forgotten.
Go ahead.
In the past, don't worry.
All right.
You know what I'm saying. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the one comment that we have to follow the science wherever it goes. And I take issue with that. I think that research and science needs some ethical limits in what it does. We've seen governments and scientists historically that go wherever they think the science leads them, do terrible atrocities to other human beings in the name of science. And, you know, we were founded on unalienable creator-given rights in terms of our liberties and freedoms. And even in the Minnesota Constitution, it acknowledges that. We, the people of the state of Minnesota, are grateful to God for our civil and religious liberties. So it's in our U.S. founding documents, it's in our Minnesota founding documents, and if you take the limitation of liberties and freedoms in every aspect of our existence based on a creator-given rights, it acts as a light and a guide to keep us from deviating into areas that become unethical and ultimately lead to atrocities towards other human beings. And we've especially seen that lately in our country since we've kicked God out of our educational system and to a certain degree out of our legal system, and in terms of the partial birth abortion of unborn children, to just give one example, I could give several others. So I'd strongly encourage the university to understand that principle, that following the science wherever it goes sounds fine on the surface, but when we look at human nature and history, it can lead to terrible consequences. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Uwakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps Representative Gruenhagen and I share the same love for history, but I approach it in a different way, and I think we can have many historical examples of when government steps in and stifles scientific research and directs scientific research to their own ends, we can have just as many awful and atrocious things happen that put us back in the Stone Age. So I have a real problem with us at this legislature telling the University of Minnesota Medical School how to conduct their research at this level, because I'm not a scientist and I would leave that up to the experts. And I really do appreciate, Representative Whalen keeping the dialogue open. I will be voting no on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Not to extend the conversation, but again, science with no ethical guidelines or limits, in my opinion, is can go down roads that have tremendously terrible results on other humanity. Thank you.
Any other discussion response from President Kaler before we take a vote?
Chair Nornes, I don't have a comment at this time. Thank you.
Representative Rosenthal, did you raise your hand?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amendment troubles me as well. I appreciate the author's intent and values, but we have a bill in front of us that doesn't help students with tuition, that doesn't do anything about student debt, and now we're trying to make the university a place which is weaker than it is without this amendment. So research is a big deal, and it's a big deal in attracting faculty and students, and the university is known for that and creates so many jobs and companies that come out of this research. I feel by restricting them on this issue is the wrong way to go. I think that if Representative Whalen and the university want to continue their talks in a way that wouldn't hurt the university, that would be great. I'll be voting no on this, and I would urge you to withdraw this amendment.
Any further discussion? Representative Wheeler, any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, for the record, want to reiterate that my hope for this is to continue the conversation. It's been my heart all along. The goal would be to see an end to aborted fetal tissue research for all of the reasons that I've previously laid out in committees, all the information that's been presented. I know there's disagreement in the scientific community on the value of it, and I just want to echo and thank Representative Gruenhagen for his comments regarding the ethical use of tissue in research and how ethics do play a part and should always play a part in research. And with that, I do thank everyone here for their respectful dialogue, and I would ask for your support on the amendment.
All those in favor of the A15 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Amendment has been adopted.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, if the President is under a tight timeline, yeah, and he's at the table, could he at this time give us his opinion on the totality of the supplemental bill and the consequences, if any, on the university while he's still there?
That's up to him. I know he's for his date already.
Chair Nornes, Representative Pulaski, I am indeed late for a big room full of people, but clearly the university brought forward a supplemental budget request. It was heard in this room. It represents critical additions to the infrastructure of the university, substantial aid to Greater Minnesota in terms of both mining and the provision of health and dental care. And we feel very strongly that the elements brought forward strengthen the university and strengthen the state of Minnesota. And so I will express disappointment on the current target for the higher education supplemental budget.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank President Kaler for being here today. We have had discussions in the past about how important it is to have the leadership of higher education present when we deal with either full funding bills or supplemental bills. So I do appreciate you being here and your statements on the amendments and your statement on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clark.
I would agree that we appreciate you being here, taking the time. And some of these issues will be ongoing, and we appreciate your participation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Now, Representative Norton, do you have the A13 amendment? Do you wish to offer that? You do not. Okay. Then, let's see. The A18 is, where did... Okay. Isaacson is out of the room. All right. Then we'll go to the 822 amendment. I can. Huh? have to wait. Okay. Oh. Does anyone have the A22?
No.
Okay, we'll maybe set that aside. Let's go to the A23. Everyone have that one? Okay, the A23 simply stakeholder group will exist with this amendment, but will be in a less formal or appointed manner. So that's all it does. This amendment provides for a stakeholder group, and they will be kind of a less formal appointed manner. Yeah. If it was as originally thought as an advisory group, then it would have to go to the Committee on Government Operations, and we just as soon avoid that. Right?
Understandable, I've been there.
Just a warning. Yeah. This is in regards to the BILT program. I should have mentioned that. Any questions or comments about it? Representative Uatham?
Thank you, Chair Norris. Is this your amendment?
Yes.
Just keeping track. And then what it does is just take out the advisory group altogether, right, from what I'm reading?
As an advisory group.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. There are no other questions on that one. We will vote on the A23 amendment. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. With the A23.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Has
the A24 been passed out?
Yes, thank you.
We also have an A18 amendment, Representative Isaacson. Is that something you wish to do? Does that, let's see. That's not necessary.
May I have just one moment, just one second.
Well, that's it. Okay. We have your A24 amendment.
I will withdraw A18.
Okay.
And I think I will withdraw A19, and yes, I will.
You're a good guy.
Do it again, sir.
Yeah. All right, then we're down to the A22. That's what we don't have, right? Yeah. Let's. Should we go to A24? That's your amendment?
Yes, sir.
Isaacson? Would you like to explain the A24?
Yes, sir.
All right.
The A24 amendment, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. If you look at, let me pull up the A10, which is now the bill, and you go to page 5. What this essentially does is makes the chancellor the arbiter of what the benchmark will be. But I have talked to Minskew, and philosophically I'm not opposed of there being some sort of understanding or relationship between, is it the Board of Education? Is that the right, correct phrase? The State Board of Education, and which is what the bill as in the current form does, is it says the State Board sets the benchmark and Minskew confirms it. And I'm mostly just concerned with the clumsiness. I think it means what
Mr. Bartholomew meant by it, which was that there is a ownership by both sides as to what the benchmark's going to be. I think that's the intent. I'm a little concerned that the language is a little clumsy in the sense that what happens if Minsky doesn't confirm it? And I don't know if there's someone here that can answer the question. Is there language that explains what happens next? Because what happens if the board sets a benchmark and Minsky says no? Are we in limbo at that point? And so I think that's my concern. And then how that question's answered will determine whether or not I would withdraw or push forward with the amendment.
Okay, anyone in the audience that can address the question? Well, not everyone got up. That's good. Welcome to the committee. And
thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Elizabeth Henches. I go by Beth. I'm a faculty member in mathematics at Century College, which is part of the Minsky system. It's a two-year college. And I've previously been a high school teacher, and I have lots of contacts with my K-12 high school colleagues. And I got a little lost in paperwork. Which amendment are we discussing for sure right now?
The A-24 amendment?
A-24, okay. Well, I just wanted to say that this is the one about setting a score on the MCAs.
Isaacson, what it would do is the language currently is written, Board of Education. Am I saying that right? Is it Board of Education?
I think it's
right?
The Department of Education.
Department of Education would set a benchmark and then would in turn go over to the chancellor who would confirm it. And my concern is that this language would make the Department of Education setting a benchmark that colleges would then have to use to determine where students would go. And so I think that would be perhaps inappropriate. However, I was saying that there should be a relationship because the two are connected in some ways. And so I was trying to confirm with the board or the department or anybody who could answer the question of what does confirm mean, what happens if they don't confirm, and how are we managing that?
Well, speaking only for myself, not for the college nor my union, I personally would want the faculty to retain control of the curriculum and to be able to define what college level ready means. And at this point, I'm also on the statewide assessment for course placement committee within MinSCU, so I'm really familiar with these issues. And standard setting is a really complicated process, and I would hope that MinSCU faculty would be involved and then it would be faculty and K-12 teachers who teach the various disciplines that would be involved in making those decisions. And I agree with Representative Isaacson that that we as a faculty and members of MinSCU should be able to create our own definitions of what success, what being prepared for college is. I think we're getting closer, K-12 and higher ed, to each other, but we're not quite there yet, and I wouldn't want to just sort of give up that right. So I would definitely agree with Representative Isaacson that the MinSCU faculty need to be involved. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay. Mr. Gehring, can you add something?
Mr. Chair, and just in response to Representative Isaacson's question, the bill itself is a little bit, is not entirely clear what exactly the process would be for reviewing and confirming benchmarks, except that I'd point out that the language is drafted, so that there's a two-step process for MinSCU. One is that they're reviewing the benchmarks, so they'll receive the scores that are proposed by the Department of Education, but then separately they have this confirming process. And I think a normal interpretation of the way a confirmation would happen would be that this language would allow the chancellor to choose not to confirm the benchmarks, and I think what would happen is that they would go back to the Department of Education and they'd have to try again. So in the same way that, for example, legislative bodies confirm appointees, I think you could do that in the same way.
Kind of, Mr. Chair,
Isaacson?
What I'm hearing is that if it doesn't get confirmed, then the department tries again and keeps until there is an understanding, so there'd be a relationship there. All right, if that is the case, then I will withdraw my amendment.
All right. Representative Isaacson withdraws the A24 amendment. No, you should all have the A22. Paper is maybe still warm. This is my amendment. It deals with the child care grant eligibility. And that's basically what it does. It involves the state grant program being available to graduate students or professional program students at the university or elsewhere. Any questions? That's fine. That's the chair's amendment, yes. Representative Isaacson.
Does that... I just got the evil eye over here. Mr. Chair, she's looked at me like that. Does that then greatly expand the pool of those that would be drawing from the current state grant program?
Representative Isaacson, it does expand the pool, but it's... when they came to me with this, need, it's uncertain as to how many would take advantage of it. How many are in that program that have kids and so forth, and who would take care of it? It's somewhat of an unknown. There's no money appropriated for it. Mm-hmm. There's understanding that there is money that could be used. If there's a huge demand, we'd have to address that probably at a later date. But right now, it's just to get the program going, to allow those students. Again, they have debt just like all the other students do. More debt, probably, obviously. So,
perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Williams, can you also add something to this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Isaacson, just to clarify, the DE2 amendment that we walked through yesterday contains language in Section 4 that expands eligibility for the Child Care Grant Program to graduate students. The A22 amendment just adds language to the formula determining the amount and length of grants that counts for the fact that we're expanding it to graduate students.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other questions or comments or anyone from the audience? I don't see any. All those in favor of the A22 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A22 amendment is adopted. This one. Well, thank you, members, for doing this in record time. Representative Norton, you have a comment.
Mr. Chair, I wondered if we were just going to take some overall statements about the final bill or what your plan is here.
We can certainly do that. And do you want to be the first one? Representative Norton?
Sure, I might need to quit talking here soon. Probably should have stopped already.
We would just soon not come back tonight if that's...
I absolutely won't speak that long. And Mr. Chair, I feel like I'm always saying to you, I wish you'd gotten a better target. I don't know that in the 10 years I've been here when you've been chair that I haven't said that to you. And, I'm just deeply disappointed that we weren't given a target. You know, we're in a time of surplus, as we all know. And that money is entrusted to us by the taxpayers to do good work with it. And I feel like we've just spent so much time this year in the big, outside of these chambers, everybody talking about, transportation and taxes. And those are all great things. But we have an obligation to the students of the state and my constituents to really do good work. And we have real needs, particularly in the area of higher ed. We have students with debt load that is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, all of my children have student loans that are going to be paid off. It's hard to watch, and I listen to the people come through here. I know we need professionals and health care, and I see the debt load that our dental students and our, other professionals, I mean, maybe docs make enough money they can pay it off, but there's a lot of other very valuable professionals in the state who end up making a salary that can't pay off the amount of student loan. And particularly, I even look at the area of physical therapy where we now require a PhD for those students. That's a lot of education, a lot of debt load, and we're not able in this committee to help them. And I just, it just, when I know what, you know, the money that's out there and that we are not being given the opportunity to use it for not fluff, but really important stuff, you know, the education, what's more important than the education of our kids? And so I'm just kind of depressed. I know a lot of us left the other day when we saw your initial bill, and it's gotten better and worse actually today. And you know, I left depressed the other day that we can't spend any money lowering debt for our kids. And Mr. Chair, I know it's not your fault. I'm not wanting to pick on you directly, but I guess your caucus and their budget targets has to take, you know, some of the blame for not giving us some money. And so I'm going to beg you, when you get over there with the Senate and when you talk to your leadership, that between now and that end of session, that this committee be given that money to help our students. And so that's my main complaint. And I just have to say I'm really disappointed in Article 4. You know, I know Representative Whalen feels very strongly about that issue, but I'm just really sorry that we didn't leave the initial Article 4 in there, which, you know, was at least not as egregious as, you know, this and the impact it can have on research. And again, I really ask all of you between now and the end of session to give some real thought as to, do we really want to have that kind of impact on the university?
Well, thank you for your comments.
I don't think we do.
I should just add one real-life story. Our pastor in my church retired. She had been a teacher before going into the ministry. So two careers, a lot of debt. And I just found out this past Sunday at a meeting that we had that she was 1 year away from paying off her student debt. So she retired 1 year before her student debt was paid off. Representative Pulaski?
Mr. Chair. I would like to follow up with that comment. And Mr. Chair, my family is still paying off our own student loans as adults while we have four children who have gone through college, which is why they had to take out loans. Right. So
there's no dispute here.
There is no dispute here.
Representative Pulaski, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, before we hear more personal stories from the members or opinions on this bill, yeah, we heard from the University of Minnesota. Does the Minsky system wish to also testify, or the private colleges, or the faculty or student groups wish to testify on this bill before we continue?
I believe they do. Ms. King? Thank you for being here. Welcome.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you. And I want to also thank you for all the time that you've provided us this session to talk to you about our system and our colleges and universities and the work that we're doing across the state on behalf of our citizens. And I want to thank you for the work that many of you have done with our staff to work through language and to pursue areas of interest. We appreciate that. The collegial relationship that we've had with members. We also would want you to understand that we are disappointed. We were here before you with a supplemental budget request, and we were disappointed that the targets didn't provide any capacity to respond to that. We hope that we can keep working on it, and we hope that the outcome will be different by the time we get to the end of session. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anyone else care to comment from the audience? I know Representative Grunhagen, you go ahead and you have the floor right now as we wait for anyone else to stand up, I guess. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple quick comments. I appreciate your leadership, Representative Norton. I appreciate all the participation of the members that were on here. And I especially want to say I believe this is Representative Norton's last session, so anything nice they say about her, she won't use on a flyer in a re-election now. No, I'm just kidding. She's, you know, when I came into the legislature, she's been a very, I've observed her to be a very astute representative, well-researched, and I've learned things from her. And she's she does her research very well, and I appreciate that. I'm sure she'll be missed down here by both sides of the aisle as far as her experience is concerned. But I do have a comment in terms of a zero target, okay? And that is my observation. The more government money you put into a system, it doesn't necessarily bring the cost down. And I share the concern about the debt with children. One of my daughters has quite a bit of student debt yet, too. And she's having a hard time finding a job that she could actually pay that debt and still have living expenses. So I know what we're doing to the children. But, you know, there is an argument in health care, higher ed, or whatever, that the more government money you put in, the higher the costs go. Human nature being what it is. And the thing I want to say, we need to have reforms that actually bring the cost down and make the system more efficient and competitive, in my opinion. And government money negates some of that. The other thing I just say is that in a previous session, a member at this table asked the question of the, I don't know if it was the University of Minnesota or Minsky officials, maybe it was both, and said, asked the question, why do you raise tuition? And then there was some stuttering around, and the rep provided the answer, because you can. Okay. And I think that we have to change the mentality at the colleges and universities to the degree that they have to bring things in line with the private sector and the people that pay the bills, and that it is a disgrace to burden children who graduate with a debt that they have a difficult, if not a possible, time paying back during their lifetime. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Pogemiller seems to be in the waiting position. Welcome to the committee, and you have some comments to share.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Pogemiller, Office of Higher Ed. On behalf of the governor, I want to thank you and your staff. You've been a joy to work with, as always, and we really appreciate it. The governor is very appreciative of the various some of the policy items you've put in on behalf of his budget. He appreciates that. We also appreciate Representative Whalen's beginning efforts to de-link the medical discovery teams from the fetal tissue issue. He notices that you've started to de-link that. He appreciates that. With regards to the budget, obviously he would like to see some modest investments in a non-budget year, but it is a non-budget year, and his priority is to do something about the gaps in attainment by race in our post-secondary system. His investments, particularly in Minsky, the $21 million, and the $20 million for grants to do best practice implementation of closing those gaps. He's particularly disappointed that you didn't have resources to work on those. He'll hope you'll be open to that in a conference committee.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions of the commissioner? Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm a little bit disappointed, too. I'm kind of disappointed in the U of M in as it relates to their tuition policy. Earlier in the year, I think President Kaler did open the door to raising tuition appropriately for non-residents, and he said he didn't think he'd have the votes at the Board of Regents, but I believe I could be incorrect. I don't think we've had any official word from the U, but I think they actually did agree to do that. And I know Representative Grunhagen last year in conference committee, you had a document that showed that there's a potential for millions and millions of dollars to come into the U, appropriately so, for managing their tuition policy correctly as it relates to non-residents, upwards of $90 million. So I'm disappointed that there's no policy to lower tuition for residents at the University of Minnesota. There are other good ways to make it college more affordable. Some of those good ways actually result in the middle people actually getting part of that money. Earlier this year, President Kaler was here. He recognized the need to lower tuition or to increase tuition for non-residents. Then he brought a chart talking about the net price of new freshmen receiving grant or scholarship aid in paying in-state tuition, which showed that the U of M is in the middle, even though when you look at tuition only for residents, they're actually $3,000 higher than Wisconsin. So I'm disappointed that somehow the discussion of tuition, which is appropriate for non-residents and increasing that, somehow got muddled through a discussion of freshmen receiving grant or scholarship aid, Minnesota grant, obviously not funded by the U, but funded by taxpayers. So I'm disappointed here that we didn't have a solution that would directly result in dollars into the pockets of U of M kids who are going to the U of M. And hopefully we'll continue, I know we'll continue the conversation, hopefully at this level or maybe the Board of Regents, that we will decide that lowering tuition at the U of M is the right thing to do. It's been done one time in 50 years, and we are long overdue for a second decrease in 50 years at the U of M. Thank you.
Representative Pawlowski, you had the floor for a minute.
Well, Mr. Chair, if there's no one else to testify, I'm going to go back to a second to numbers. We started this last week. I'm going to finish it tonight. We have now heard 37 bills in this committee. The total of the 37 bills, with not all fiscal notes in, is $178,945,200, and not all fiscal notes are in. In 2015, which was the budget year, the legislature and the governor invested in higher ed $166 million. So in the regular budget year, which is 5 months, we invested $166 million, which was appropriate. In the short year, which has never been a budget year, this is never intended to be a full budget year, we looked at $178,945,200, for which the target is zero. You had hearings into the evening. We had at least 37 bills and how many amendments and reports. So I want to talk about zero for a second, because I understand zero. It's an easy number, zero. And I understand the fact that zero can be equated with, we're not going to waste taxpayer money. We're not going to spend any money. I would argue that when you have the number of hearings that we've had here to the totality of this number, you are wasting taxpayers' dollars. You're wasting time. You're wasting paper, staff time that could be used on other issues like transportation, capital investment, just to name two. We have heard members of the majority say when they've testified that, well, whatever the number, pick one, 750,000, well, I hope it's resolved in conference committee. So apparently the majority here says we can't spend money, but we sure hope the Senate can, and we'll take theirs. I think if you take a position of zero, you stay with zero. Mm-hmm. Zero. That's it. And you tell the public up front, it's zero. But we don't go through 37 bills. We don't go through weeks of hearings to arrive at $178,945,200 in totality without all fiscal notes, and then we say, sorry, folks, it's zero. If you really are serious about this, there should be funding. If you're not, then don't say we hope it comes back in the conference committee and we get it from the Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Pawlowski. I would only add one thing, that only until the end, within the last couple of weeks, did we even know what the target was. Now, we were optimistic we'd have a target of some kind, but obviously we don't control that either. So I understand what you're saying, and you know, it's probably, but then understanding that, we probably shouldn't have been here in the first place. We could have all been home and saved taxpayers a lot of money.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, I chaired this committee too.
Representative Pawlowski.
I chaired it in 2014. I had four hearings. Four. We had one target. The bill was two sentences long. When we were done, the committee was done. We didn't promise anybody anything we couldn't afford. We didn't have any hearings. We went after one thing, the target. I don't think it's any surprise the target here was zero. I believed you after the special session when your leadership said, we're done spending. I believed you. I'm not arguing with you. That's your position. What I'm arguing with is doing all of this is fake. And I think the public is fed up with fake.
Well, I disagree with that, but I think that, you know, as chair, I felt always that if a bill comes to my committee, then it warrants a hearing. I don't care if it's on either side of the aisle. And I've tried to do that, and if the numbers don't add up right, that's just the way things work out. But I've never felt that because of chair, I can say, well, we're not going to hear any bills, and sorry. we're all here with election certificates and have something to add to the discussion at least. So I know we'll disagree on that, but I don't know if anyone here feels that they've wasted this time, although they're disappointed. And I agree with you that I guess we will be seeing what happens in the Senate. I'm not sure that they're going to be, I know they've got a wish list, and so, you know, going through the conference committee is not going to be a fun time either, and we don't have a lot of time to figure that out. So who wants to volunteer to be on that? I know we've got at least one. Anyway, Representative Norton, you...
I just want to say, I'm Representative Plowski, and I don't agree on a lot sometimes, I think. But I do want to say, I've appreciated having the hearings. I've appreciated at least your willingness to run a committee where both parties get bills heard. And I can tell you I'm doing work on civil discourse across the country, and there are legislators, and I've talked to some chairs who refuse to hear the minority party's bills at all. And when we've talked to them about, wouldn't you just hear one from each member, even if you told them in advance it wouldn't pass, those members said yes. The minority members said yes, because my constituents want to know that I'm working. So I have appreciated it. I am frustrated that we don't have money to spend. But at least we've heard some bills, so if money is available, you have some things to choose from. So I just want to share a little different perspective, and thank you.
I have to add, I think members on both sides have worked together on some of these legislative items, and Representative Plowski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have one other point. When we did the study in 07-08 of the GovOps Committee of this legislative process, we had NCSL come in for 6 months. We had the interim and into the 2008 session. The recommendation is still in the Legislative Reference Library. There were recommendations made because we were looked at as the Wild West of bills. You could put in anything, anytime, any place. This legislative session, we're up to 3,890 bills, and there's 134 of us. So we can do anything, but we're a finite system in which we put infinite inputs in. And it broke in 2015. We went to special session. Almost every other year it breaks, because it can't sustain the load. I disagree with the fact that we should hear everything. I think as a fiscal chair, it's our fiduciary responsibility to say no. I think you said no with zero, but you didn't back it up.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With all due respect to Representative Plowski, I have to disagree with you. I haven't been around here as long, and you certainly carry a lot more weight than me, but there's two things going on, and I think that you've assigned the blame in the wrong spot. To be mad at the higher education chair for doing what the higher education chair is supposed to do is a bit disingenuous when your real frustration is the leadership that told the higher education chair to do what he's supposed to do, but then pulled the rug out when he said he can't have any money. That's the problem. The problem isn't that the committee met and wasn't doing its job. The problem is that the committee met and was doing its job, but then wasn't given the authority to finish its job. And that's what leadership of the Republican Party has decided. And so I think those are two different things. But secondly, and perhaps more importantly, I want to address some two comments earlier. First of all, Glenn, Representative Grunhagen, you are the nicest person I never agree with that I've ever met. I want to say that you are the nicest person that I never agree with. And so I have a great respect for how nice you are. So I hope you take this in the way I mean it. I've heard now two people talk about the problem with tuition and raising tuition and those kind of things, lest we forget that this state once took this responsibility of paying for education pretty greatly and managed that very well, and has since withdrawn from that responsibility and disinvested in our schools and in our kids. When they're raising tuition, it's because they're competing on a global level. A global level. This isn't M State competing with U of M Duluth. This is the University of Minnesota competing with every other national college in the world, or international college in the world. And so when we're not taking our responsibility seriously, the shame isn't on them, it is on us. Simply put, the reality of the fact is why in the world do we create barriers to the one thing that guarantees the further success of our nation, which is education? And by creating the financial barriers we make, we then stop people from having the opportunity to do that. So if we have anything we should be spending money on, it's definitely making sure that people have access and ability to go to school. And when we don't allow for that, when tuition has to go up, when the state continues to disinvest from higher education, we have this problem continue time and time again. And at the same time, we then turn to the U and say, well, cut your budget, you're clearly spending too much money. So I struggle with that whole philosophy. And that being said, I do appreciate the process, and I wanted to say one other thing, that there's been a lot of disagreement, and really staunch disagreement, and I've enjoyed this more than other committees, because despite all the staunch disagreement, there's been really wonderful conversation and really enlightening thinking. And even though we may never agree and it will always be diametrically opposed on that issue, I didn't feel like there was a sense of disrespect that I feel in other committees. I've told you that before. I've discussed with my Republican representatives that we're able to have an actual thoughtful discussion that every now and then even searches for the truth, which I think is nice. Thank you.
Well, Representative McDonald.
I'm going to pass.
Okay. All right. Then we have a substitute. Representative Barrett, we'll put that in for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Isaacson, who I appreciate greatly, and you are one of the nicest people that I know that I don't agree with often or a lot of the time. So I think we should start a working group, a two-member working group, to look at the issue of tuition and funding and see what the relationship is or isn't. I've started that work, but would appreciate bipartisan support on the subject because what I've found is more often than not, the two are not linked. Certain schools there are, University of Wyoming, go Cowboys, they are linked. My daughter goes there. They are linked. High funding, low tuition. University of Illinois, high tuition. Many are on one side or the other. Few are in between. Few actually have a direct correlation. You look at the U of M over the past 50 years, you look at the funding, and their funding levels do not generally. You will find areas where they have, generally speaking, there is not a correlation between funding level and their tuition increases. They've always increased, don't get me wrong. Almost always, I should say, up until recently. So anyway, we should start this bipartisan working group so we could get at the facts and speak the truth and present that next session.
Good
Thank
idea.
Here,
here. I just, in kind of closing here, I want to say that we're going to miss Representative Norton. Thank you for being How many years have you been on this committee? You
10.
10 years. Through good and bad times.
Indeed.
And I get the bad times, right? Yeah, yeah. That's been a pleasure. The other thing is, this is probably our last committee meeting, except for getting into a conference committee eventually. If that changes, we'll let you know. We have two more pieces of information, or at least two more things we have to do, and one is to adopt the DE2 as amended, and I'd like everyone, if they're in favor of that, to say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh, I'm sorry. Opposed? There we go. That gets two hits. That gets two hits. Then I move that House File 3237 as amended be moved to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Done. Okay. Members, thank you very much.
Bye.
We are also done.
Bye.